Shalom, this is Yair Davidi from New Bambi, Brit Am Broadcasting Israel, speaking to you on behalf of the New Brit Am 10 Tribes Movement. We believe that the lost 10 tribes are today to be found amongst Western peoples. That is not necessarily that everyone in those areas is descended from Israelites, but a good proportion of them are, and that is aware, according to biblical prophecy, the lost 10 tribes in the end times were to be concentrated and where they were to give expression to their biblical potential. We have proven this point from the Bible, from rabbinical sources, from historical sources, from secular studies, linguistics, mythology, and various other fields, as may be seen from our publications and on numerous articles on our website. Go to britam.org, and there you will find a lot of material on this subject concerning the lost 10 tribes and concerning biblical subjects in general. We, as part of our ongoing studies of the Bible, of biblical works, are continuing this week's portion, the portion of the Bible, of the Torah that will be learnt in this Shabbat, in this coming Shabbat, in every synagogue throughout the world, in every Beit Knesset, wherever it may be, within the land of Israel, or outside of the land of Israel. This week's portion is called in Hebrew, Baha'alotecha. It extends from the book of Numbers, in the book of Numbers, chapters 8, verse 1, to chapter 12, verse 16. It is called Baha'alotecha. And this portion is what we are studying, what we are going through, and giving an overall view, a brief summary, and pointing out a few points of interest. In this portion, it begins by telling us how Aaron was the brother of Moses. Aaron was the brother of Moses, and he had the task of officiating in the tabernacle. In effect, he was the high priest. He was the original high priest. He and his sons officiated as priests in the tabernacle. The tabernacle was a precursor, was a prototype, the forerunner of the temple. And all the priests in the temple were to be descended from Aaron. They were to be assisted by the Levites. The Levites were not priests, but they officiated in the temple. They were from the tribe of Levi. Aaron and Moses were also from the tribe of Levi, but Aaron had the task of being a priest, whereas the Levites did other work. They helped around the temple. They served as guards, as singers in the choir, played musical instruments. They could help in the slaughtering of the animals, or different tasks that the Levites would also do in the temple area. Incidentally, the prophet Samuel was a Levite, and he was to officiate, helped Eli the Kohen officiate in the tabernacle when the tabernacle was in Shiloh. As a good portion of our section, of the section that we're speaking with, Baha'alotecha, concerns the tabernacle, and in the previous sections we just learned how the tabernacle was built, what went into putting it together and consecrating it, and this present portion is continuing of this theme connected with the tabernacle. So, Aaron is instructed at the beginning to take the menorah. The menorah was a large 7-branch candlestick made out of pure gold. And Aaron was instructed to light it and where to place it. And that begins our section. After that, the Levites are to be dedicated to the service. Originally, every firstborn Israelite had to dedicate himself to the worship of the Almighty, to do the holy service. After that, the Levites, as we will see, as our portion tells us, the Levites replaced them. Now, after setting up the tabernacle and consecrating the tabernacle and doing everything like that and all its implements, so to the Levites are dedicated. The Levites are dedicated, they are set aside, and a portion describes their dedication, how they were dedicated. They were to be, first of all, to immerse themselves in their clothes in holy water. In water that was fitting for immersion, whether in the spring, or a pool of rainwater collected in a certain way, both their bodies and their clothing. Then they were to be sprinkled with water and ashes of the red bull, which would was a special bull that prepared in a certain way that would purify them from impurity of if they had come in contact with dead people and so on. They also had to shave their hair. Usually shaving the hair was forbidden, but they had to do it in this case. Then they brought two bulls forward. And then all of the people of Israel put their hands on the Levites as if to say the people of Israel were symbolically transferring the responsibility of serving in the tabernacle to them, and the Levites were to serve in the tabernacle for them. And then the Levites, after having the hands of all Israel placed upon them, then the Levites would place their hands on the two bulls. These two bulls were sacrificed, separate types of sacrifice, and the sacrifices were in order to atone or to purify them for any sin or imperfection they may still have had and had not yet atoned for. And that was their whole dedication to the service of the Almighty. As it says, it goes on in Numbers 8:2, speak unto Aaron and say unto him, when thou lightest the lamps, the seven lamps shall give light over against the candlestick. Candlestick is the menorah in Hebrew. And it goes on and it tells us what we have explained, how they had to purify themselves and dedicate themselves. And it says, Numbers 8:13, and you shall set the Levites before Aaron and before his sons, and offer them for an offering unto the Lord. The Levites, in other words, were separate. They were separate from the other people. They were separate from the other children of Israel. They were separate from the other tribes. There were 12 tribes. Levite was one of the tribes that were set aside. The Levites were not to inherit in the land. They were to receive cities scattered throughout the other territories. They were not to receive their own city, their own territory, their own land, as if to say, but rather cities and townships. Also, the Levites did not go out to war. They were not counted in the hosts of Israel who went out to war, went out to fight. The Levites were exempt from that. Even though on occasion the Levites could also be used for police work and border defense in certain situations, on the whole they were not used for military purposes. Their main function was to serve the Almighty through learning, officiating in the tabernacle, overseeing the religious practices of the other Israelites. And to some degree they also served the task of a police force. And now in the state of Israel, quite a few policemen, you will not be surprised to find that quite a few policemen have the names Levi and Cohen and so on. Much more, in other words, they are represented in the Israeli police force to a greater degree than in their representation in the general population. Also, as we saw, the Levites, their function, they were set aside to serve the Almighty. That was their task. That was what God wanted them to do. And now in the state of Israel, we have people who learn Torah full-time, and they fulfill something similar, parallel to what the Levites used to do. We have a large number of ultra-Orthodox Jews who learn full-time. They learn in different institutions. Sometimes they learn alone. Usually they learn in groups, in certain synagogues, in certain Beit Midrash, houses of learning. And there's quite a lot of them, tens of thousands of these people. And they all learn. They really do learn. You go and hang out with them, talk to them, become acquainted with them. Like any organization, anywhere you go, you get people who are slack, who do less than others. But these people, on the whole, they really do learn. And many of them learn very well and very intensely. And they are very nice people, and they know a lot. And historically, the Jews have always had people who dedicate themselves, set themselves apart to learn full-time. But never before in the whole of history have so many Jews learned Torah, and not with such intensity as in our times. One of the advantages of our times of present civilization and present advancement is that it has enabled a large number of Jews, more than ever than at any other time, to learn Torah and to learn Torah all the time. Torah is learned. By Torah I mean the books of the Bible and commentaries on the books of the Bible and on the laws emanating from the Bible. And this has resulted in a great body of knowledge becoming available. And how do they maintain themselves? So they receive a small amount from the government and different groups of philanthropists and others. give them money. And the Israeli society is built in order to support them, to help them. And in addition to that, there are other ways which they manage to support themselves. They have businesses, or some of them have businesses, or religious Jews have businesses. Put aside 10, 20, 30%, not usually around 20% is accepted of the income to help these people. People overseas also put aside a good portion of the income to help these people. And so they get by. And they get by on the whole on a modest level. But they come through. They do what they have to do. They raise families. The children are raised well on the whole with a good education. And the important things in life, the things that really matter, are what they receive. By merit of their learning, the state of Israel prospers and is protected from its enemies. The whole community benefits. The influence of those who learn Torah full-time permeates the whole of Israeli society, even though it may not be evident at first to outsiders. And it brings a blessing. It brings a great deal of good on the whole of the Jewish people, on the whole of the Israeli community in Israel, on the whole of the world benefits from this. Now there are, because these people, they are religious and they dedicate themselves to religious purposes, and they don't work full time, or a lot of them, a good portion of them don't work. They also usually don't go to the army. And you always get secular people and anti-religious people who hate anything to do with the Almighty, anything to do with the Bible, anything to do with righteousness. So there are those who criticize them and are against them and attack them and say wrong things about them. There are those who say that these ultra-religious Jews who learn full-time get out of going to the army, and they put the burden of going to the army of protecting the country on other people to serve in their place, to shed their blood in their place. Also say that these people are parasites and do not contribute to the economy. They say other things about them, and that these things that are said about them on the whole are untrue. They are false. And in some respects, they are diametrically opposite to the truth, to the reality. The reality has to be seen, has to be looked at, and has to be looked at in a realistic way. But the reality exists. The reality, what is the reality? The reality is something which is real, which has effects, which is there, which you can feel and which is known of. Whether it is logical, whether it is rational or not, that is another question. Maybe according to the law of aerodynamics, one saw a remark, according to the law of aerodynamics, a jet airplane shouldn't be able to fly. Jet airplanes defy the laws of dynamics, and nevertheless they do fly. And when we want to go from one country to another, we pay money and we buy a ticket and we get on these planes, and usually these planes succeed in bringing us to where we want to go to. That is reality. Whether it accords with rationality, with the logic, with the laws of physics as we know them, is another matter. So too, these learning Torah, the reality is those who learn Torah contribute to the economy, contribute to the defense of the state of Israel, contribute to us and help all of the world. Due to the learning of Torah, the Almighty shows favor to Israel. The miracles happen to us all the time. The Israeli government, Israeli defense forces, always, day after day, miracles happen. Lives are saved. People, successes, military successes are achieved. And that is not only due to the intelligence, to the valor, to the bravery, to the resourcefulness of the Israeli defense forces, because they do have this, they do exist. They are heroes, most of them, and sometimes not. But that does not explain the successes they have, the luck they have, the miracles that happen to them. There's something supernatural that God, thank God, has been happening. Happens all the time. If you live in Israel, you're aware of this. You hear of it. You read it in the newspapers. You hear it on the radio, on the television. You hear it from your friends and your neighbors, and you yourself experience it in your own being. that miracles happen in the land of Israel, and the land of Israel is protected from its enemies. The Jewish people here are protected from their enemies to some degree, because there are people who learn Torah full time. And the more they do, the greater the blessing that comes upon us. The learning of Torah elevates and intensifies the intellectual progress of Israeli scientists and thinkers. The Jewish brain helps protect the state of Israel much more than the Israeli brawn. Even though you need it, we also need the brawn. We need muscles. We need macho people. Without them, we would all be in great trouble. But they are not necessarily the major factor in protecting us. The major factor in protecting us is an abstract spiritual reality. And the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, do not really want more men. It has too many men. It receives more conscripts than it can really deal with. It's difficult to admit this because, for social reasons, for political reasons. But even so, about 20% of secular, non-religious people who go to the army are rejected or allowed to get out of it. Anyone who really wants to get out of it can do so without much trouble. They also conscript girls or allow girls to join up, but they don't really want them. They don't have very much to do with them. Even those who are employed in gainful employment in the army, it is often questionable if economically they justify the expenses that are put out for them. Nevertheless, females continue to be conscripted into the army, usually for ideological reasons, so that we can say that we're giving equal opportunity, that the women too are expected to contribute something to the nation, something to the defense of the country. The women too can be fighters and soldiers, and we are not gender orientated. We're not discriminated against them, and this is this is not exactly the point. It's not exactly true either. What we were saying, that the those who learn Torah full time, they actually help the IDF by not going into the army, and how they contribute, they contribute much more to the defense of the country than they would do otherwise. They contribute a great deal. Also economically, they contribute a lot. Most of the money that Israel gets, the economy runs upon. A lot of it is fueled by Haredi ultra-Orthodox initiated enterprises. And we can go into the ins and outs, this and that, the pros and cons. On the whole, they do contribute a lot. Just suffice it to say that the Israeli government gives to each one of these people who learn Torah full-time, it gives him a stipend of about $200 a month. And on the whole, they spend a month or the cost that goes into maintaining them a month is about $1,000. So where does the balance come from? They produce the balance. They produce more than the balance. They bring it into the country and they produce it here in Israel. And so can be shown. And this is just the beginning. This is just scratching the surface. When you go into it, it becomes 1,000 times more pertinent to the points we have made. In reality, they who learn Torah give to Israel, they maintain Israel, they beskut the virtue of them. The state of Israel is a much better place to be in. They give back to the country more than 1,000-fold whatever they take out of it. And most secular Israelis, most non-religious Israelis know these facts, and they want it. They want religious Jews who learn Torah full-time to keep doing so, to learn even more intensely. They know that it's for their good and for the good of everyone. And what else is life for? To watch television, to play football, to hang out, to entertain yourselves. No, your person really wants something deep. He wants family values, he wants religious values, he wants to think that he is a person, to know he is someone, that his life means something, and that there's a chance for him to reach a higher level, if not him, his children, and his children, his neighbors, somewhere or other, in something that he is connected to go to a higher plane. And those who learn Torah full time enable the whole of the Israeli society to somehow or other get a little bit closer to holiness, to the consciousness of God, Almighty God of Israel, which is palpable in the land of Israel and can be felt by anyone who walks around here. The holiness and sacredness of this land is felt, it can be felt, and it influences all of us. And these people who learn Torah full time, they are continuing the task that Levi had, as spoken of in our portion. The Levites were dedicated to divine service. The sacred functions originally had to be fulfilled by the firstborn. Originally, as our portion tells us, as if to say, the firstborn son of every family was originally to be the holy person, was originally to be, as if to say, the priest of the family, and to fulfill the priestly functions in all of the community. But as a result of the golden calf, when the children of Israel sinned in the golden calf, and they created this idol of a golden bull calf and worshipped it, so their right to appoint a firstborn from out of their family members was taken away from them. And it was given to the tribe of Levi. Levi was the tribe of Moses, and the tribe of Levi was not responsible, did not participate on the whole in the sin of the golden calf. The Levites were set aside for such a purpose, to work in the tabernacle. And that is what our portion says, even though there are indications that from the very beginning it had been intended that Levi should fulfill this function of officiating in the tabernacle and officiating in religious functions. The Levites would enter the service of the tabernacle at their 25th year, and they would serve a kind of apprenticeship for 5 years, and only at the age of 30 would they be considered fully qualified to do what had to be done. And the portion continues, Numbers chapter 8, as it says, Numbers 8:19, I have given the Levites as a gift to Aaron and to his sons from among the children of Israel, to do the service of the children of Israel in the tabernacle of the congregation, and to make an atonement for the children of Israel, that there be no plague among the children of Israel when the children of Israel come nigh unto the sanctuary. The sanctuary, in other words, the tabernacle in Hebrew is known as the Mishkan. Mishkan, from the word shakain, dwell. Mishkan, in other words, was the place in which the Almighty, the Divine Presence, dwelt, in which God made His presence felt to the Israelite people. The service in the tabernacle averted disasters from Israel. It brought a blessing on the entire community. The tabernacle equals the temple. Nowadays we do not have a temple, but soon we may have. God willing, the temple will be rebuilt and the temple service restored. And this may come about much sooner than we realize. In the meantime, we can achieve somewhat of a similar effect to what was achieved in the temple service through Bible learning and doing good deeds and praying. And our portion goes on and it tells us of the second Passover. The second Passover was a second opportunity, a second Passover, as if to say. For the first Passover was on the 14th day of the month of Nisan, when they had to come to the temple area. Every male had to come up to the temple area. Usually they come up with all of their family, and then they would offer up a sacrifice in the temple. Each family, or each group of families, would offer up a lamb on the 14th day of Nisan. It happened if someone was impure. He had been defiled through touching a dead person, through some type of omission. Through some type of sickness whatsoever, if he had been defiled and he could not sacrifice, or for some reason he had been far away and he had not been able to get to Jerusalem in time, then he had a second chance. He had the chance to do what is called a Pesach Sheni, the second Passover, which came around a month later on the 14th day of the month of Iyar. That is what our push tells us about, and it tells us how this second Passover should have been kept and what should be done. It also says in Numbers 9:14, if a stranger shall sojourn among you and will keep the Passover to the Lord according to the ordinance of the Passover, according to the manner thereof, so shall they do. You shall have one ordinance both for the stranger and for him that was born in the land. There's one law for native-born Israelites and one for the foreigner who comes and identifies with Israel. In the end, converts to Torah law, he is to be treated exactly the same as all of us. every single person is equal, including the stranger who comes from another country, from another people, and attaches himself to us. He too is to be treated the same as us. So to the prophet Ezekiel emphasizes that in the end times, the non-Israelites who live amongst Israelites and identify with them, these non-Israelite peoples who dwell amongst us and identify with us, they will receive a portion with us in the land when the Messiah will divide the land of Israel from the Nile to the Euphrates up amongst the different tribes. So too will the stranger, the non-Israelite stranger who dwells amongst us, he will receive a portion together with that of the other of his neighbors in the tribe amongst in the Israelite tribe amongst which he dwells. That this is referred to in Ezekiel 47:21, 47:22. The book of Ezekiel shall divide the land unto you according to the tribes of Israel, and shall come to pass that shall divide it by lot for an inheritance unto you to the strangers that sojourn among you, which shall beget children among you. They shall be unto you as born in the country among the children of Israel. They shall have an inheritance with you among the tribes of Israel. That's what Ezekiel 47:22 says. Then a portion continues, tells us how that Mishkan, the tabernacle, was set up, was covered by a heavenly cloud during the day, a fiery cloud at night. When the cloud would lift, the people of Israel would travel forward. When the cloud rested, the people would camp. Also, they made two silver trumpets. These trumpets were used to assemble the people and to signal their movement forward. Different sounds of the trumpet had different meanings, had different signals, same as in the modern day armies or as used in the Civil War in the USA. And after the Israelites entered the land of Israel, these trumpets were made of silver. They were to be sounded during times of trouble and also on festival occasions during temple service. Nowadays in the land of Israel, attempts have been made to revive this practice. They are made, trumpets of silver have been made, they're very nice, I've seen them. They're very impressive, big long trumpets, made as far as I know, in the same way as trumpets in ancient times in ancient Israel were made, out of silver. And these trumpets are blown, they are sounded by Kohens or by Levites. The Western Wall in Jerusalem, is when the public prayer assemblies are held in times of crisis. Every now and again, I live in the land of Israel, I live in Jerusalem, and the God have mercy, we get through, we manage, but frequently all types of crises come upon us, the wars, threats of wars, all kinds of problems, terrorist attacks, lack of water, rainfall, and so on. And so very often, not that often, but quite on frequent occasions, the rabbis and the holy people get together, they call for public assemblies, and thousands of people come to the Western Wall, and they say, Psalms, Tehillim, and they people give words of encouragement, words of arousal, and also they sound these trumpets. So there's been a revival of these silver trumpets being sounded at times of trouble, as mentioned in our portion, and it's interesting to see how the laws written in the Bible that for thousands of years were not in practice are now being brought back into practice, are now being revived. And once again, maintained as in ancient times. And a portion continues how the cloud that was over the tabernacle, over the Mishkan, moved. The Israelites moved forward altogether. Judah went first. The camp of Judah was included Issachar and Zebulun. After that, the tabernacle was taken to pieces. Levites took the different pieces of the tabernacle in wagons. After that came the tribes of Reuben, Shimon, and Gad. Then another section of the Levites, the family of Kahat, carrying the second vessels, followed. Then came the section of Ephraim, Manasseh, and Benjamin. Finally, the tribes of Dan, Asher, and Naphtali. The 12 tribes were divided up into four different sections of 3 tribes each. And a section describes this and describes the construction and the assembly and the taking the tabernacle down and putting it together again, and how the tribe set off and who was the leaders of each tribe. It also tells us that Hobab, it says Hobab in Hebrew, Chobav, because the letter, the sound of ba, in the Hebrew alphabet use the same letter and are interchangeable. So Hobab or Hobab, the son of Reuel, it says in English it is translated as Raguel, it was actually Reuel, the Midianite, father-in-law of Moses, he was with them, and Moses asked him to come with them, to continue with them. And he refused, but he said he would go back to his family. But we find later that he did return. And he did continue with them, as we shall see. And it continues, and it tells us that how the ark set forward, and then Moses cried out, and Moses said a prayer when the ark would go forward in Numbers 10:35. Arise up, O Lord, and your enemies be scattered, and let them that hate you flee before you. When it rested, when the ark, when the cloud, in other words, the ark would travel according to the cloud progress. When the cloud stopped going forward, the ark would stop. Then Moses would said, return, O Lord, unto the many thousands of Israel. The God, the presence of God, remains with the people of Israel, with the thousands of Israel who follow after God, who believe in God and try and do His word. The Almighty presence dwells with them. And also we are told there was an incident, or several incidents in these marchings, when the people lacked food. And they complained, and God was angry with them, and He sent a plague amongst them, and also, but He did feed them. He sent the manna, which used to fall from heaven, a type of food, a food made of some natural phenomenon, which would descend every day, would keep them alive, keep them going. Also, He sent unto them quail, birds, when they wanted flesh, when they wanted meat. And they ate this meat, and they were... Also, a plague came against them because it was not... The way they had requested it was not as the request should have been made. God was angry with them, and this is all related in our portion. After that, Moses was told to get together 70 men of the elders of Israel in Numbers 11:16. He had to get together 70 men who he knows to be the elders of the people and officers over them, and he had to bring them into the tabernacle of the congregation, into the Mishkan, Oel Moed, into the place of assembly, and they should be there. And then God says in Numbers 11:17, he will come down and talk with you there, and God will put his spirit, which he had to put upon Moses, he would put it upon them. The 70 elders were the first Sanhedrin, the first great assembly, and they were a national council of statesmen of elders, and they had to decide any matters that as to how the Bible should be applied, as to how the laws should be carried out, or other matters. And they would sit around and debate and decide amongst themselves, and whatever decision they made, this was had the approval of God Almighty, as we find in the Deuteronomy chapter 17, where whatever they say had to be listened to. Someone who disobeyed them could be put to death, God forbid. And the decisions that they came to were kept, were retained, people remembered them, they served as legal precedents. And that was the beginning of the oral law. The oral law, which tells us how the biblical law, how the written law should be maintained, how it should be kept, how it should be put into practice, began in the Bible, is part of the Bible. It is the sister of the Bible. Without it, we cannot understand the Bible. And it is referred to in our portion when the Almighty tells Moses to set aside 70 elders and who would be a national council to decide matters that had to be decided. And then our portion tells us about two men, as we come to Numbers 11, 11:25, 11:26, and so on, who are not amongst the 70 elders, but they too received a divine inspiration, and they were not with the General Assembly. So this is, also brings out another point, that everything that is designed, everything that is controlled, everything that the God decides and lays out for us to do, the major plot, the major, the divine plan, as if to say, the system works. The system has to be used. The system is to be respected. People are born into certain positions, they receive certain positions because of their education, because of their connections, because they were brought up into living, into doing, acting and thinking in certain ways, and therefore they are more suited than others to fulfill certain offices. This happens everywhere in the world, throughout the world, in communist countries, in democratic countries, in aristocratic countries, this is, in every society, where they're connected with religion, with education, with company policies, with government, with social activities, etc. But nevertheless, there's also the other point that someone who comes from nowhere, doesn't have all of these connections, doesn't have all of these qualities, all of these qualifications, but somehow or other, he too proves himself worthy and willing to take upon himself the posts in question. He should not be denied. He should be allowed to take what he is qualified for, what he shows himself worthy of, even though he has not necessarily gone through the whole process of making himself qualified. Also, we find in a lot of cases when you have certain jobs, engineers, doctors, and so on, even architecture. So we find now here and there lay people who have not gone to universities, have not done the necessary course of study, but they've learned on their own. They know much better than the professionals. They should be able to work and to make a living from this knowledge that they have gained, and they are prevented from doing so because the system does not let them. So the system is justified in many cases in not letting them, or in restricting access. But it should be done in such a way that exceptions can be allowed to give expressions to themselves. And this too is what happens in this case, that the Spirit of the Almighty came down on Moses and Aaron, and came down on Joshua, the second in command of Moses, and came down on the 70 elders. And they were assembled there together to receive it. But apart from them, it also came down on two people called Eldad and Medad, who were in the camp, who were separate from him. They too received it. And they had, as if to say, received it. And they were not in the list of those who had been appointed beforehand to receive this divine presence. So Joshua, the second in command with Moses, was quite angry at it. He was a bit indignant about it. He suggested that Moses put them in the lockup, kala'im, close them up. Put them in the top of a hold all, a kind of prison that they had there, and Moses said no. And are you angry for me? Are you jealous for me? How love I? I only wish that the God Almighty would put His Spirit upon all of the congregation, that everybody should be like them. And so this too tells us something about, in general, about life in general, about the Bible in general, that the biblical message is that the Israelites are a chosen people, and those who keep the law, such as the Jewish people, also receive a special closeness to the Almighty, and all those who are born under the seed of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, including the lost 10 tribes, are special people, are chosen people. They have special qualities, they have obligations, and also promised rewards that will accrue for them, and they have to fulfill both their obligations and to receive their rewards. But nevertheless, there are other people who, if they too come from other countries, and they identify with Israelite people, and they do what God Almighty wants, they too will be rewarded. This is reflected in the Midrash, Tana Devei Eliyahu, the Midrash connected to the house of Eliyahu. It says, and I quote, "I bear witness before heaven and earth that Jew or Gentile, man or woman, slave or maidservant, all receive holy revelation according to their actions." Everything is according to your actions, according to what you do. That is how you will be judged. Do good, and good will come unto you. And God will reveal His presence, His inspiration will He give unto you. No matter who you are, everything is according to what you do. What you do is what makes you who you are. You can remake yourself by reforming your actions. Come close to God, learn the Bible, pray, and it's very, you can't really do it on your own. You need the help of the Almighty. You recognize that. that on your own things are very difficult, things are almost impossible. Recognize that you need help from the Almighty, you need direction. Pray, learn the Bible, get in contact with people who can direct you if possible, and you will receive divine inspiration and divine guidance in your life, God willing, as will all of us, as will all the children of Israel, and all those who believe in the Almighty, and all those who want to come close unto Him. Our section continues, and where it tells us about the incident of Miriam and Aaron speaking against Moses for taking a Cushite woman. This was connected with Miriam, who was from a Midianite. She was the wife of Moses. She apparently was a very dark woman. There are different commentaries explaining this incident. We, according to our understanding, based on commentaries, based on rabbinical commentaries, but of a certain school of thought, because there are differences of opinion. A certain school of thought says they criticized Moses for taking a dark woman, a woman of a different color, and because of that they were punished. And Miriam was stricken with leprosy, which made her white, super white, so that she had to beg Moses to ask God to heal her. And this was message was telling her that you thought being white was good, that you were discriminating against someone of a different color, therefore you were punished by being super white. And so she had to beg to be healed, and she herself was the most respectable, the most holy person in the whole of the Israelite community. And so was Aaron, and both of them fell down, both of them allowed themselves to be infected by this spirit of racial prejudice, and because of that God berated them, God rebuked them, and they were punished for it. And that is contained in our portion, and the Bible is against racial prejudice. The Bible is against being prejudiced against someone because of the color of their skin. On our website, we have a whole article about this going into this in detail. Go to our website, www.britam.org, BRITAM.org, and you will find an article with more details on this matter. You also find articles on related subjects, also pictures of ancient Israelites from Egyptian tombs, and from Phoenician drawings and Israelite drawings, and comments as to what the ancient Israelites looked like, and pictures from the Israelite times, and so on, as well as a lot more material concerning the ancient Israelites in general, concerning the Israelites and their present day identity as both Judah from the Jewish people and from the Lost Ten Tribes amongst Western peoples, and how both groups have their own separate goals in this world. There's different tasks. Eventually they have to will reunite. Judah will reunite with those 10 tribes. The Messiah will come. Things will be restored as to how they once were. And God will guide us and help us. And may God willing this happen to us now in our own lives. May the Almighty help us, heal us, and help us through whatever problems we have. And may He make His presence felt unto us. For more information, go to www.britam.org. Britam.org. Thank you. This is Yair Davidi from New Bambi, Britam Broadcasting, Israel.